Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Invincible Season 2, Episode 1 is over, but we're just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. My name is Jason Reed, a.k.a. the Talking Titan. I am here with my co-host, the Gift of Gab, a.k.a. Gia Worthy. Gia, how are you?
Thank you, Talking Titan. I am very tired. This has been a whirlwind of a week. Not as worse as Mark's week. He seems to be going through a lot.
Yeah, Mark's had a bad week, a bad month. Probably going to have a bad year.
A bad life, Mark? I don't know. He's got a lot to work through.
For sure.
So I guess, after this very crazy week that I had, watching this definitely made me think, hey, things aren't so bad right now. I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah.
I have had zero parental figures threaten to take over the planet. So that's already a win right there.
I'm still looking at my mother. It could happen. It could happen at any moment, you know.
I'm glad that you have identified the parent that it would most likely be.
Yes. I'm definitely side-eyed my mother. So she could be a super villain. She's done some things that may be might be a little villainous. I don't know. Tell me to clean my room constantly, you know.
Just start dropping Beltramite or something like that. See how she reacts.
She perks up. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you feel about conquering the world? What are your feelings about that?
Have you ever considered this?
Yeah. What do you want me to join you on some crusade of yours if I ever develop powers? My mom must be so disappointed in me. I'm in my late 30s, have yet to develop powers. She's just waiting for my powers to come in. So disappointing.
Some of us will just be the Debbies of the family and drink a lot of wine. That's where I come in. Yes.
100%. Season 2 is here finally after about a 2.5 year hiatus from Season 1 to Season 2. It feels a lot less for you, Gia, because you just watched Season 1 a couple weeks ago. So you're not as long for you. But for people that watched it when it originally came on, it's been about 2.5 years since the last season. So finally, we're back with new Invincible.
It's been so funny to see. I've been trying to avoid scrolling through Twitter like I do with a lot of shows to just get people's reactions to episodes because I think for this one, because it's still very new to me, I want some time to kind of form my own opinions. But a lot of them are basically it's been so long, it's finally here. I'm I just finished the season a week ago. So I am right on schedule with this. But it took a while, and I know this was probably the show's intention, but I was a good 10 minutes in still very confused about what was going on.
Yeah, you know, for me, I felt the episode overall, my overall vibes after the episode was over, I said this is a good episode, but not great for me. It's a lot of Mark moping. It was a fine episode. It's a good reintroduction to the world. The beginning stages are what is happening here? So let's kind of dive into the episode as a whole. The first thing we see is Invincible. I this came on and I thought this was, all right, we're back in the world. Invincible is back being a superhero. And maybe he and Immortal are sparring right now. Just a training thing. Maybe Immortal's taking up Mark's training. It's okay, cool. And then the fighting gets real. It's like, okay, this is a little serious. And then once you know who swoops down and eviscerates Omni-Man. This is like the third time we've seen Omni-Man eviscerate the Immortal at this point in this series. But
at some point, we have to admit that this is just like a sick pleasure of the creators of this show, because it has happened far too frequently.
Yeah, it's the third time that Immortal's head has been cut off, I think. Like, well, he didn't cut off the second time, but this is like the second time Immortal's head has been chopped off by Omni-Man. And we're like, you know, us at home are like, what the hell's happening? Why is Omni-Man back here? Why is Mark cool with this? Why is Mark crushing Immortal's head once he gets it from the severed head from when his dad chopped it off? Like, what the hell's going on? So, you know, Omni kills Immortal, severs his head, Invincible crushes it. Omni says, you know, it's a shame that Immortal doesn't see the way that the world is, or the way that, you know, the things that we do, me and you, Mark. I'm like, okay, what's going on? So definitely something's off, because last we saw, Invincible fought his dad because he didn't want to be part of his plan to take over the world. It's like, okay, what's going on? So we follow Invincible and Omni-Man through this earth as they are subjugating people, and it's seemingly in this version of things, Mark has come around to Omni-Man's side and was like, hey, yeah, we are Viltrumite. We should take over this world. And then we see them take down a resistance cell that consists of Adam Eve, Robot, aka Rudy, and some guy we've never met. Some guy is looking on at Omni-Man and Invincible as they are, you know, taking over the world. He goes to the secret bunker that gets taken out by Omni-Man and Invincible. What did you think as we were coming into this setting here that we saw?
Okay, first thing I got, like, the fighting was a little bit much, but then I was like, okay, this is a nightmare sequence here where it's like, oh, what if I am just like my dad and I'm doing all this terrible stuff that he's doing and stuff. And then the dream just went on for a little too long for it to actually be like a nightmare sequence that I had presumed that it was.
Yeah, you're like, wake up, Mark, wake up, please, wake up.
Yeah, it was like, I'm like, okay, guys, like, I get, and you know, we have talked several times about how Invincible is not afraid of the very awkward pauses and like very long times of like time stretches of uncomfortable imagery. So this seemed like this wasn't like so off brand where I was like, oh, this could just like, this makes no sense. What is going on here? All of that stuff. So I was very confused, as you would say. It went on for a little too long for me to be like, okay, this is definitely what this is. And it wasn't until we met the new guy and he explained kind of like what his whole deal is that it actually started to make sense. I'm still a little lost, but also if it's an excuse to keep the Mulder brothers in the mix, I'm not really gonna complain. Yeah. So I started this episode with a lot of questions, and I ended with probably the same amount of questions, but in a different way. Like, there were different questions that I had at this point.
Yeah, so I think all of my superhero training that I'm going through right now with watching Loki along with Sasha Joseph on Everything is Super kind of clued me in into what may be going on here as far as multiple universes and alternate timelines and things like that. So I think I picked that up at a certain point. Like, this is a universe where Mark did come around to Nolan's side and they took over the world together. So we, you know, as we do on Invincible, we see some of our heroes getting eviscerated. We see Robot, aka Rudy, in this universe. He has his body that we saw from season one, the small, you know, crippled body in the pod of Robot, get taken out by Omni-Man, who so cruelly is like, you never should have been born. I was like, whoa, that's a lot. As he's killing Robot, aka Rudy, we see Mark, who is this kind of, in this version of Mark, is this almost uncaring, unfeeling, stoic, matter-of-factly killing people and blaming them for their own subjugation, like Nolan did in season one, where he's like, this is your fault. Like, all this destruction is because you just won't go along with the plan. Mark is basically parroting that to all of his used-to-be friends in his reality. He's talking to Adam Eve. He's like, all this is happening because you won't just go with the plan. And he takes Adam. He's like, I don't want to kill you, Adam, if I don't want to hurt you. But then he does. I think he kills her. I'm like, oh, yeah. My God, he just killed her. And it's even worse than that, GM, because
reason, there was a worse option than immediate death.
Yeah. He's like, no, I just paralyzed her. I want to keep her, like, basically almost like Nolan, right? He wants to almost keep her as a pet. Almost as Nolan with the Debbie. Mark wants to keep Adam Eve as, like, this paralyzed kind of pet that he has. Which is just so cruel and, you know, unfeeling.
It was just very weird secrets. Like, you can just presume that Rex was killed at some point because they mention him, but we never see him. Adam Eve, who looks great in a buzz cut, by the way. Like,
that rebel chic.
her rebellion era, like girl boss tour, all of that stuff. She looks great with her long hair, but she's a versatile gal. She looks great with the buzz cut as well. But it was just very, I don't even know what to say. It was just, it was not the most disturbing thing we have ever seen on this show. Like, obviously we have talked several times about just like how graphic this show can take, but I guess I didn't really think too much about the alternate universes aspect of this world, even though I feel like they have mentioned the possibilities several times in season one, but there's just so much going on during that time that it really, like, this felt fairly out of place. But I feel like I felt the same thing about the premiere of season one as well, where it was like, it was fine. It was an introductory episode. Get us used to the ideas that, and the people that we need to know for this season. And that was kind of it. And then the action picked up after that in the following episodes, when now that we've had the characters established. So I don't know. It was weird. It was just like a very odd experience watching it for the first time and just going in really blind to the show, because this is the newest thing. This is the point that we have come to, where it's like, now we are fully unspoiled, no like memories of the past season, like discourse, or be remembering like certain clips from Twitter or anything like that. So yeah, this is going to be really interesting journey in here. I've not really been into a ton of shows that have the alternate universes thing, but I'm very intrigued with what they're going to do here with it, because I think it'll be very interesting.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see what could have been in our main world, right? If Mark had gone along with his dad, and it's a good way of showing us what could have happened without it actually being what happened. It's kind of a cheat the show does. It's like, this is what would have happened if he did go along with it. and it's interesting to see just the cavalier attitude and nature that both Mark and Invincible have in destroying people. Whereas like after they take care of Adam Eve and Rudy and all them, they're like, and Nolan's just like, hi folks, like as if he's just giving them their mail for that. He's like, hey guys, since you're here, we're gonna have to kill you right now, so get ready, you're about to die. this is how matter of factly, and as if it's just another day for him just killing people, it's fine. But before he can kill everyone there, the man that we have just met, who we don't know his name yet. He's the guy that introduced us to the underground base. We saw him going in down there. He's like, hey, like, you can't do this. And he's trying to fight back. But before he can be killed, he mysteriously gets dragged down through some portal. And we're like, okay, what's this all about? What's going on? We have no idea. And so we are just left to assume that Invincible and Omni are now just going to kill everyone there. Interesting. So that's where we kind of cut. That's the big scene that we get. And by the way, immediately off the bat, I'm like, oh, is that Sterling K. Brown? I love Sterling K. Brown.
Yes.
That's my guy.
Yep. There's been a couple actors where, like I said last season, like Seth Rogen, Nicole Byer, immediately recognize the voices of them. And Sterling K. Brown, I think, like, he's done voice work before, so this is not anything relatively new, but like, they even made sure to include his jawline in this character. Yeah. Like, you can't hide that jawline anywhere, not even in the animated. There is no universe where Sterling K. Brown does not have that very 90 degree angle jawline going on there.
Yeah, I mean, he my big thing for him is This Is Us, so like I've heard that voice for like five seasons. I'm like, oh my god, that's Sterling K. Brown. So yeah, that's our big introductory into this season where, you know, we don't know what's happening. We don't know why this is the way we've come in. We're like, what's going on? What's happening? Who is this guy? What's up? So we come back into the real world. So we are back in Mark's world. Mark is going through his kind of superhero day, almost kind of sleepwalking through it, right? He visits the mountain that his dad beat his ass on first thing. And then he's spending the rest of the day kind of doing superhero things. He's putting on a warehouse fire with a tidal wave. He's stopping Elephant Man again, which was a kind of a callback to season one, which I think is probably supposed to be like a play on the Rhino from the Spider-Man, you know, villains, because it's just a guy in a big elephant costume, which is interesting, you know. And he's just kind of floating around, going throughout the skies, helping people out. I think it was interesting that, you know, and the music choice was fantastic. Karma Police by Radiohead is playing.
Oh, it was so good.
Yeah, it's just such a dreary feeling.
It was something that I feel like we didn't even really bring up because there was just so much to talk about in the season one recaps that we've done. It's just like the score, the soundtracks that they have done for these episodes are so good. Not really like anything that I would expect from a show like this, but yeah, they nailed it. They nailed it here too. I feel like it really captured the eerie feeling we're supposed to feel watching this show.
Yeah, it's just this kind of like depressing tone as Mark is, you know, going through his day, you know, almost trying to right wrongs in his own life. And so he arrives home. He's obviously just very depressed, very distraught. We can tell off the bat. He's just like, hey, what's up? Like, he's not lively anymore. It's just not the Mark that we've seen in the past. We do see a news report talking about, you know, life after Omni-Man in Chicago and how things are being rebuilt and all that good stuff. Mark meets up with his mom, who also, you know, is having a hard time. They talk about, you know, having to get back out in the world and get back out there and trying to move on with their lives. Meanwhile, in the desert, we see the same superhuman detainment facility we saw the Mahler twins in season one. I thought it was some great callbacks to season one as they banter with the guard that they broke his arm or broke his collarbone when they escaped the first time.
So I thought they killed him. I thought he died. And you know, they didn't really, it was an escape, they didn't really show us the aftermath until they get arrested again at the season 8 finale. I mean, at the episode 8 and season 1 finale, comma. There's a comma in there. Yeah. But they show that same guard with the neck brace. So then in my mind, I'm like, okay, so they didn't actually kill him. But apparently, this man cannot be grateful that he was not murdered because he still has a bit of a grudge to them trying to kill him the first time.
Yeah, like, listen, we could have ripped out your spine. We could have done a whole bunch of stuff to you, but we just broke your arm. Like, be grateful, man.
I believe them. I think that if they had wanted to kill them or kill the guard, they would have. I totally believe their reasoning here. And I think to them, that is like a perfectly reasonable response here.
That's a sound logic in their mind. Like, you know, we could have done bad things too. So they're basically kind of threatening him. Like, listen, you got to get us some better food. What was it last season? Was it
pie?
Chicken pot pie. That's right. Yes. They had chicken pot pie last season they loved. But now they're getting served like this gruel type of slop. Thing that they don't love. They're like, listen, you gotta get us some better food or next time we're gonna freaking kill you. Yeah. But
I believe them again too.
Yeah, but Gary, I'm just gonna name Gary. Gary is not trying to hear it. He's like, listen, get your ass back there. You know, we got better security now, we got better prison, better locks. Like, you guys aren't getting out now. And as Gary says that, two portals pop up behind each Mahler bro, and I just love the banter between the Mahler bros. He's like, the one Mahler bro goes to the other like, is this you? He's like, oh yeah, I'm just shitting portals now, like that's what I do, like, that's my thing now. It's like, no,
they truly are brothers, like in every sense. Like, I get that they're clones of each, or one's the clone, one's the original, but
Honest, they're probably, at this point, they're probably both clones. Like, the original probably died a while ago. Like, this is probably the fifth or sixth iteration of the clones going through, like, the cycle here. Probably. I would imagine.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So they go through the portals. They wind up in this kind of wasteland. And they see someone lurking. They don't know who it is, but it is our guy, Sterling K. Brown. We still don't know his name yet, but they catch up with him, and he introduces himself. He says, my name is Angstrom Levy. He explains that this isn't the world the Maulers are from. And the Maulers, you know, smart as they are, correctly surmise, like, without even being told, like, oh, we get it. You can open portals between dimensions. He's like, yeah. It's like, how did you know? It's like, oh, yeah. I mean, you could tell. Yeah, Angstrom tells him he needs their help. He's working on something. It's kind of an ethical stretch, but he needs their science know-how. And they reluctantly follow him through another portal because Angstrom basically threatens to leave them there if they don't. Let's see. Go ahead.
And I mean, he does make some good points. It's like, if I, you know, I could just leave you here. It's very similar to the Mulder brothers. Like, they gave the two smart asses of the season another smart ass to deal with this episode, yeah. Which is always a good idea.
Yeah, of course. Like, they play very well off each other. We are back with Mark in school. This is his first time back since, from what everyone at school knows, is his dad dying. So I think that's the cover story that they have for Mark. His dad's dead. So everyone's kind of talking about Mark coming back. Todd comes up to him. We think Todd is the bully from last season. We think Todd's coming up to hassle Mark, but no, instead he hugs him, tells him he's sorry his dad got exploded. He says, you know, I kind of wish it was my dad because my dad sucks.
Like, I would hate to lose my dad and my dad's a dick.
Yeah, like, my dad kind of sucks.
And I heard your dad was like a good guy.
Yeah.
It's like, because there obviously Mark has very different circumstances and what anybody here is going to know here, but like, the having somebody you know go through a death like that, there's just never a good way to say anything, even if you do have like a good relationship with that person. So this is just so out of pocket. But yeah, with everything that we just saw, this was such a nice breath of fresh air. More comedic moments like this, please.
Listen, I appreciate Todd. Okay, he's trying to right wrongs. He's a sympathetic character. Okay, so let's cut Todd some slack now.
Yeah,
Todd's good. Yeah. Todd can be redeemed.
He's trying. He's trying. Yeah. That's more than some people are doing here, Omni Man.
Yeah, and Todd keeps talking, but Mark, you know, Mark definitely has some PTSD going on because at this point he's kind of phasing out of the conversation. He just kind of hears a ringing in his ears, and Amber, you know, kindly comes and basically saves him from having to talk to Todd anymore. Mark, you know, Mark and Amber sit down, and Mark explains, you know, he's so sad because he feels like he's the reason all those people in Chicago died, and he needs to get out there and make up for those mistakes. Amber correctly says, listen, you actually saved a whole bunch of people. You this wasn't your fault. You owed no one nothing. Mark's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. Mark, it feels like he's partly to blame here. So he meets up later with Cecil at the Burger Mart and tries to convince Cecil to let him go back out on, you know, back out on the streets again, be official hero for the GDA. Cecil says, yeah, man, you're not ready for this. It's only been a month. You need to focus on school, your mom, your girlfriend. You need to get right mentally before you can get back in the game. Mark, who, you know, we saw a little bit of this kind of aggressive anger in Mark in season one at points. He says, listen, I don't need your permission. And he slams the table and ends up, like, you know, denting and bending the table. So it's an interesting mix that Mark has here of, like, grief and anger and, you know, his aggressive nature that could come from his Viltrumite side. It's all kind of a ticking time bomb, maybe, that we might see explode during the season.
Yeah, and, like, not to, you know, like, I hate agreeing with the man, but, like, maybe Cecil has a point here. Mark, you're not really helping your case with you saying that you're ready to get back out in the field.
Yeah. So we follow Cecil back into the Pentagon where Donald is there. I'm like, excuse me, Donald, last I remember you were being exploded along with Mark's dad.
I was also confused about that because I really thought I was like watching the wrong thing for a moment. It's like, wait a minute. But apparently he's just there and no one is bothering to explain it to us. He even had a goodbye in there, so it was just like, he even had his little like, it was an honor serving you.
Yeah, he's like, the honor was all mine. Yeah, so we have no explanation. I guess we're going to get that somewhere down the line because
I guess they can bring back My Immortal, but then he's immortal, so that seems like something they would be able to do with him.
Yeah,
maybe they wouldn't necessarily do with someone else.
Cecil seemed like a Nick Fury figure, where I wouldn't put it past a Nick Fury in the Marvel Universe to have some samples of DNA on file of Donald, and he cloned Donald because Donald was such a great right-hand man.
That is very fair. Yeah. I don't know anything about Nick Fury except that he's played by Samuel L. Jackson, and he has I took the council's decision into consideration, but since it was a stupid ass decision, I ignored it. That's what I know about him, and it just feels very on brand.
Yeah, he's very shady. So I definitely don't put it past Cecil to have like just cloned Donald, because he's like, Donald was such a good assistant. Donald's such a good right hand guy. I need another one of Donald. I'll just clone him and be fine with it. I would not be surprised that's what we're dealing with here. So when he's in the Pentagon, they're kind of viewing a fight between the Guardians and someone named the Giant, who is rampaging downtown, as you know, villains do. He apparently has the intellect and the mannerisms of an 8-year-old. He says, he cries out to when he's fighting, guys, I want to be the president of the United States and an astronaut. It's like, you know,
so that's what I thought as well before they even said it. It's like, I thought they were going to say, oh, this was like a baby from whatever planet this character is from.
It's like, listen, we've had worse presidents, so maybe give Giant a shot.
I vote. Listen, they have my vote.
Yeah, give Giant a shot. So the Giant is rampaging. Rudy is running around. He's trying to be the leader. He's given direction, but he almost gets squashed by the Giant, and he kind of freaks out a little bit. But Monster Girl does save Rudy before he can be crushed by the Giant. And Rudy's like, I don't know what happened. Like, I just kind of froze. I kind of like, I was, you know, I was worried. I was nervous. She's, oh yeah, that's because you're here now. You're not some drone, you know, like a video game. You're actually here in the present. Like, so you have the risk of death. It's like, oh yeah, good point. So they somehow, some way get the Giant into a underground parking garage. And you know, the fight moves off from there. We can assume that they ended up capturing the Giant, but we don't really get to see the ending of the fight. What did you think overall of this nice action scene?
I wouldn't be surprised if we end up seeing this creature back again. I still kind of think this is like a baby from some planet, and we're gonna get like their parents later on, and that's gonna be a whole thing. Yeah, right. Like that just feels on brand for this. But I thought it was interesting. I was a little confused. This whole episode was a little bit confusing with like the pacing of everything, but it did start to make sense because of how the follow-up of this is the decision to add another Guardian and switch leadership from Rudy to the Immortal.
The Immortal.
So it makes sense for like giving the viewers an opportunity to see what is flawed right now about the current Guardians, because they ended on a very high note in the past season where like they weren't perfect. They didn't solve a lot of the issues that they had, but they were starting to see each other as a team and actually working together, which was still a very far cry from where they were last season, or from where they were at the like when the Guardians were first formed.
Yeah, it kind of brings up like my issue with the new Guardians that I had compared to the old Guardians, who seemed like a souped up super team. They were like the Justice League, they were heavy hitters, and this was like, yeah, the kind of the junior Guardians team in my mind. They were the team at once upon a time, but I felt they weren't really powered enough, and I felt like this whole like change of leadership, like he brings in the Immortal to be the new leader, which brings a big heavy hitter on their side. They bring in this person called Bulletproof, who we don't really get much of anything from. We just know that he's a strong guy. He's a heavy hitter as well. We don't know why. We're gonna, I guess, have that explained to us in a different episode. But he kind of, you know, as Rex likes to do when he gets introduced to these people, he kind of acts like an asshole. And Bulletproof's like, why I gotta do that, man? Like, why I gotta be like that? Be better. Like, so maybe a voice of reason on the team is also an interesting way, because it seems like there's just a bunch of kids on this team that don't do a lot besides Samson. I was curious as to why we didn't get a kind of a opinion from Samson here, because Samson in season one wanted to be the leader. He didn't think Robot should be the leader. He wanted to be the leader, but we didn't really get any you know, dialogue from Samson asking why he could be the leader and why Immortal had to be the leader now. Oh, that was interesting.
Yeah, it did feel very weird, especially because now Samson has his powers back. Mm-hmm. So that felt like the reason that they didn't make him the leader when they first formed this new iteration of the Guardians. And now he has his powers back and they're not going with Rudy being the leader. So then it feels like that would be, but he like doesn't even have really any commentary on it. And Bulletproof just came out of nowhere, really. Have we seen any mention of this guy? Like, he definitely wasn't at the auditions or training like thing for the new Guardian. So it just feels very, this part feels particularly random. I can understand how we get to certain parts of this episode just based on the storylines they're going with like the alternate universes where we left off at season one. There was a lot of like mentions at the very end of season one that were like, this is how they are trying to rebuild after all of this terrible things happened. This part feels very random, and like I do like that they point out the fact that like Rudy is now a person, like in a full human body with functioning parts that he did not have in his original iteration. Like, he can breathe air, but because of that, and he has lungs now. Good for him. We love that for him. We love that. We love that growth. Mm-hmm. You know what that is? Growth. And, but I think, and because he's a very like heavy on the logic, he also knows that like, yeah, he is not the best person to lead them right now. So I think like this was a really interesting perspective to take. But yeah, them going with Maya Mortal, who still seems very heavy on the revenge of Omni-Man, which is fair.
Yeah.
But I mean, necessarily.
Yeah. Listen, he's been killed by this guy twice now. He's ready to take his revenge, take his vendetta.
Yes. So I totally get that about the Immortal. But I don't know, especially if like they're just trying to rebuild this team right now, if like what happens if Omni-Man comes back? Are they going to be like sacrificing this ill like equipped team to try to fight someone that couldn't take like an actual like the A team of the series was not able to beat? Like, I think there's going to be some issues there, and like, let's be honest, we know Omni-Man's going to come back at some point. So I have not seen it myself, but like, they can't just have him disappear forever. So it just feels like this, there were like these very immediate changes. Some of them we have reasons for, like Rudy is just not ready right now in his current, like with all of these big changes with him. But also like when we get, you know, like the Bulletproof edition, I'm sure we'll get something on him. The lack of Samson having really any input in this change when he wanted to be the leader originally. And like, what are Duplicate and the other person, the shrinking one?
Yeah, Shrinking Ray, is that her name? Like, see, that's how little that she's been focused on. We don't even know her real name.
Exactly. And like, they still haven't really gotten any type of, I don't even know if I need to give them a storyline, but like, give them a personality at least. Like, we don't actually know about, and we know they are in the Guardians, but they don't actually get to do anything or have a distinct personality of their own, any of the Kates or Shrinking Ray. So it's just, that was the one thing that I was just kind of, and again, season one was 8 episodes. There's only so much stuff, and they put a lot into season one. Mm-hmm. But I want to see more of these characters, especially because like those are two of the women in Guardians of the Globe, and I would like to know more about them, even if they, it's just like a little, like, give them a personality, like tell them, what are their favorite movies? Like, just tell us something.
What's your favorite color, Duplicate?
Yes.
I'm assuming it's purple since her outfit's purple. But I think it's interesting that they've introduced this whole world of superheroes, but we've only really gotten to know a small amount of superheroes. Like, we had a whole trainings audition round with a whole bunch of other heroes, but then they just went by the wayside and were never seen again. And so I'm wondering, I would like to see if there's other teams of heroes out there. Are the Guardians the only game in town? I feel like we got at least a name mention of a different team in season one.
I feel like before the news went out that the Guardians were killed, they had mentioned that like the Guardians were really it, but we had like the team, and then there were like other teams that were also like there, because team was like number 4 or something like that. Yeah. In like rankings, and we've just never, ever since that, we've just never heard about any of these supposed teams that are around. There are really any other heroes besides the ones that like had like Titan from last season that had like an episode like dedicated to him.
Right. I think it would be a fun subplot if like the Guardians was trying to prove their legitimacy against a different team that's maybe trying to take the top spot as the premier team of the world.
And I feel like, because this isn't something that, like, the original Guardians would concern themselves with. They seem like they were very, like, this is, we are doing our job. We are getting the job done. But this new Guardians, there's a bunch of petty bitches in this.
Yes, they want to prove themselves. Yeah.
They want to be number one. But give them another team that they have to be number one. Oh, like, no mercy on them. I think that would be the funniest episode.
Yeah, imaginable. Like just competing to who could save the world the best. Yes, that would be so much fun. But, you know, maybe that's a season 3 thing, because season 2 seems to be, you know, Immortal and Bulletproof are coming onto the team. I'm interested to see where that goes. Yeah, a whole
bunch of universes to figure out now.
Exactly. But we come back to the Angstrom plotline. He shows the twins the machine that he built is based off of the Mahler twins' design of an encoder. I think it's probably the same thing he used to transfer to make a new version of Rudy in season 1. So I think this is what that is on a bigger scale, because it reads, copies, and rewrites human minds. At least it's supposed to, but Angstrom cannot get it working. He can't figure it out. And of course, the Mahler twins have it down. Like, oh yeah, we can do this. This is no problem. But first, they want to know what he needs it for and what's in it for them. Angstrom then explains, listen, there's an infinite number of dimensions, and I can access all of them. And he explains, in most dimensions, Omni-Man and Invincible teamed up and took over the planet. And there's so, and in other dimensions, there's so many other resources to be found, so many ways to do peacekeeping. There's so much information out there that could solve all the world's problems. We could save billions of lives. And the Mahler twins are like, oh yeah, we still haven't heard what's in it for us. We still haven't heard anything that's really tickling our fancy, because we don't give a shit about saving humans. We are villains. He says, well, listen, I can get you to a dimension with no heroes, and you can live your lives there. And they're like, yeah, that'd be cool. But we also need a population that would view us as gods. So basically what Angstrom wants is a way. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, no, I was just going to say, if they've thought about this, you know, like, they may be villains, but, like, they don't like the fugitive lifestyle, you know, the life that has been chosen for them. So, yeah, they have a couple demands if they're going to do something nice, at least.
Yeah, and Angstrom, at least as we're introduced to him, it seems like a very kind of heroic guy. Seems like someone with good intentions, because he's like, listen, I'll take you somewhere as long as you don't hurt anyone. You'll be good there. And he also introduces the Mahler twins to what Angstrom calls the family, which is a bunch more hymns, basically. So this is really the answer to the question of what was going on in part of that first scene, where we see this version of Angstrom get sucked down to a portal. That was this Angstrom getting that guy from that dimension. So we now know that Angstrom has what he calls the family, a bunch of hymns running around. And I mean, listen, the parallels between this and what's going on in the Loki series right now cannot be ignored. It's so weird and so interesting, because both of these shows went off season 1 the first time around the same time, and now they're both back, both dealing with multiverses, both dealing with alternate timelines, both dealing with variants of themselves, because that's what this is for Angstrom. It's a variant. It's all his different hymns running around. He's the only one with this power, but he wants to use all the information of all his variants to solve all the world's problems. Now, the Maulers kind of rightly say, like, okay, well, why don't you just ask them a bunch of stuff, get the information, and then you can do with that what you will. Angstrom's like, no, I want it to be where I have all the information, and I'm the only one that can solve the puzzle. I thought that was a very, like, kind of like, I really want to be the hero here. Like, I want it to be on my shoulders alone.
Yes.
Which is very 100%. Interesting. You know, he's got good intentions, but I think he kind of wants to be, he wants all the glory for himself.
Yeah, I think there is something to, like, it almost gives, like, cult leader vibes where they're like, we want to create this perfect society, but of course I would be in charge of this perfect society. Yes. Because it's a perfect society, and I am the one that, like, realized first what would make a society perfect. So I have a feeling this is not, he's not a one and done type character, even though, like, not. I'm a little confused with what happened with the Mulder brother fusion thing there, but I do think we will be getting, like, more of him in some iteration, however we get him. But it was a very intriguing concept of this character, where he seems like a, like, kind of a hippy dippy type of dude.
He's an intellectual.
All about the peace and love and philosophy books and stuff like that. But then once we start learning a little bit more about him, it's just like, okay, maybe back it up a bit before we just jump right into it. Even the Mulder brothers at some point were like, okay, wait a minute. This is, like, too much right here. Do not be taking off your helmet when we're in the middle of this. We're like, this is actually very powerful stuff. So, like,
yeah,
I don't think you're ready. And he wasn't ready. He was definitely not ready.
Angstrom is the guy at the coffee shop that will give you the information that you never asked for. Like, you weren't even talking to him, but he wants to strike up a conversation with you and tell you and show you how much he knows about certain topics. Like, yes, that's who Angstrom is at this point, I think, in the real world.
Yes, absolutely.
We shift focus back to the Grayson household, and Debbie has come home from work, and who is there but Olga? Red Rush's wife from the first season. She's a widow now because, you know, her man Red Rush was killed by Omni-Man in season one. Like Debbie, I was like, all right, what's Olga about to do here with his knife? But no, Olga's just made a nice stroganoff to feed Debbie and Mark in this time of need.
I love that she just came in. She was just like, your back door was unlocked. So obviously I left myself in. Not acknowledging the fact that meant she went to their back door to check to see if it was,
like, no, ma'am.
Even believe that door was unlocked. I think she picked the lock to let herself in. And but you know what? It's Olga, so I will allow
you. You'll excuse it. But I'm like, Olga, like, you couldn't call me, you couldn't text me, you'd be like, I'm in town.
Yes. Cecil cannot just let himself. I know he has powers that he doesn't have to let himself in, but, like, he cannot do what Olga does. He could never be Olga. Yeah,
Cecil needs a teleporter. He can't pick a lock. Yes. So, yeah, Olga is like, yeah, I'm here to help. I'm not trying to kill you. If I wanted to kill you, I'd poison you, not knife you.
Which is also, again, very, very fair.
Yeah. Basically, Olga and Debbie kind of commiserate a little bit. She can't believe that Debbie can't believe she's a goddamn pet. You know, Olga peps her up. She says, listen, I have this place. She gives Debbie a card, which, you know, I was like, what the hell is this? Which I'm guessing is like a support group for like, you know, spouses or people connected to superheroes. It's my guess of what this card was. You know, what this is going to turn into anyway. So a nice little visit from Olga. I'm sure that you were ecstatic to see Olga again.
I was very excited. I'm kind of sad because she was like, I'm going to go back to Moscow in 2 days. I'm like, girl, you don't want to go to you don't want to go to Moscow. Just, like, just hang out here. Be like the new dad for Debbie and Debbie and Mark here.
To support the Graysons.
Just be like the new roommate. Yeah.
They need some help. Everyone needs
a little emotional support Russian roommate every once in a while.
Yeah, there you go. So we bring the action back to Mark. We're back at school again, and Eve just kind of pops up at the school. She had a backpack also. Like, is Eve back at school? Is Eve, you know, doing things again? He's like, no, she's just here to visit Mark. She explains, you know, life in the woods is nice. She's apparently still doing her, like, humanitarian superhero aiding, which is cool. And Mark says, yeah, I'm just kind of, I'm doing my invincible thing. I'm just kind of flying around like an idiot. He says he can't stop thinking about how much he used to want to be his dad, and wonders if maybe he will turn into his dad without even realizing it. He says, listen, you'll be fine. The whole world knows that you're not your dad, and you'll prove it to them. Back with Cecil and Donald, they were back in the Pentagon. They have tracked the Mahler twins. They see the Mahler twins have been doing a bunch of transactions, and now they're in a warehouse with a bunch of power coming from the warehouse. So they're wondering what the heck is up. And just as Cecil seemingly is probably about to call in the Guardians, Mark shows up, says, listen, I want to work for you. I'll do whatever you need me to do. No questions asked. I'm yours to work with as you will. So Cecil's like, all right, fine. And Cecil goes to send Mark after the Mahler twins. Now we come to the warehouse. The twins are getting the encoder ready. We have this huge machine with a bunch of seats. And we see a lot of the family, the Angstrom variants, sitting in the seats. And the twins explain to him, listen, we got a lot of stuff going on here. It's a thousand minds. You're doing a lot to make sure that you remember who you are while you're still getting the memories and all the knowledge from all the other people. So like, don't mess this up. Don't do anything crazy about what's going on here. Like, cause this is taking a lot of work. Our boy Invincible shows up. He's like, listen, either shut it down or I'll shut it down for you. Whoa. Hey, I think this is the first time. Is this the first time Mark is even like seeing the Mahler twins? I don't recall them even being in frame together in season one.
I feel like they must have, but I can't remember what.
I think Mark might like know who they are, but I don't think we actually saw them fight each other. Like, they know who each other are, but I don't think we've ever seen them fight. So I think the original Guardians fought the Mahler twins, and then Robot fought the Mahler twins in season one. But I don't think Invincible did. I don't know. I don't remember. But yeah, Invincible shows up. Let's shut it down. They start fighting. Angstrom is in his seat, getting his mind, like, all his minds downloaded into one. He's trying to convince Invincible to, like, you don't understand. Like, I'm trying to help. I'm a good guy. Like, stop fighting. This is something for good. But Invincible's not really trying to hear that. He's fighting the Maulers. And so Angstrom's like, fine, you're not going to stop. I'm going to call for some help. He calls a bunch of other Mahler bros from different dimensions to try and fight against Invincible. He's like, help your brothers. I was like, okay, all right, Angstrom, you're really,
I was very confused. Like, okay, that's what also makes me think that something else shady is going on here. Because, like the Mulder brothers say, is like you said, we were special. And like, obviously he was lying, but like, for what reason? So why are you here?
I'm just wondering if he went to other dimensions and tried to get the other Mahler bros to do the same thing, but they couldn't figure it out. These are the only Mahler bros that could figure it out. I'm wondering.
But that just feels, with all of the, maybe, is it because in like this universe, Mark does not take his dad's deal? And that's why, or is it like there's something else going on here and we just don't know it yet? Like, I have a lot of questions about this, so I do hope we see more of all of them, all three of those other characters.
Yeah. So Mark is getting his ass beat by all the Mahler bro variants, and Angstrom's like, listen, I don't want him killed. I just want you to stop him. But the Mahler bros are not listening. Angstrom says, listen, I do not want to build my utopia with blood. And he begins to take his helmet off before the process is done. And that causes a whole cascade of problems, because that it blows everything up, blows the warehouse of smithereens, kills a bunch of Maulers and the Angstroms, from what we can tell. In the rubble, Mark wakes up. He gets up. All the Guardians show up, and the Rex is like, "Hey, good job! You stopped the Maulers. You did a lot of damage, but you stopped them. Good job!" Like, bro, where were y'all when I was fighting the Maulers? Like, let's talk about that. Like, y'all came up here in the aftermath. Where were you when I needed your help? That's what I would be saying if I was Mark. But Mark is so distraught. Mark has killed people. I think that's really what's hitting him at this moment. It doesn't even matter that it's the Mahler bros. It's like, I'm again killing people. I got blood on my hands, literally. So he's, all tore up about that. Cecil sends him home, and leaves the Guardians to kind of sort through the rubble. When Mark gets home, he explains his mom what's going on. But Mark does have a letter from Upstate University. And this kind of came out of nowhere for me. I don't know how you felt about this. I was like, this is kind of a random subplot to be throwing in here at this moment. But we get a sequence of Mark and Amber opening their college letters together. They both got in. They're both happy. They make out and celebrate. What did you think of this like kind of subplot that was almost kind of, I felt wedged into here?
It definitely did feel wedged into here, especially since I forgot that they wanted to go to college from last season. Mm-hmm. But I think in some ways it's not so crazy, only because like with everything Mark is going through right now, it's nice to have something as like sort of a distraction for him where it's like, okay, yeah, pretty much everything in my life is shit right now. However, I do have this good thing going for me, which is like I have a relationship that I'm very happy with. And we're talking about building a future together in the form of going to college together. This is 17-year-old stuff, so I'm not gonna, like, you know, like, this is obviously much different than if Mark and Amber were much older than being high schoolers. But I can see how that would be in an everyday situation makes sense that this would be something that is part of his life still as a distraction from everything else. However, in terms of like a storytelling tool, yeah, it does feel very random with everything else that we were getting in this episode.
Yeah, I can definitely see what you're saying. It's like a little ray of sunshine and all the depression that Mark has in this episode. It felt like I just blew up a bunch of people, but hey, I got my college letter. That makes everything better for some reason.
That part did feel, it did feel very weird where it was like, like, I know they that Amber was comforting him earlier mm-hmm. in the episode, and it was very sweet. They got their moment and everything, but it just felt very weird how they phrased it for like, oh, by the way, remember they went to that college tour? Yeah, they do still want to go to college together, even though, like, in hindsight, it's like, this is the least of anybody. And again, they're high schoolers. So, you know, this is going to be like a nice little distraction for them. But also it's like, okay, this is like, we got a lot of things to sort through first before you're just gallivanting to whatever college you decide you and your girlfriend want to go to.
Yeah, Invincible, I felt like a criticism of season one. I felt like they were juggling a little too much at times. And they didn't really give a lot of focus to one storyline. You know, one storyline always got kind of the short end of the stick. And I feel like this is that storyline for right now. Like, I don't even know if I wanted this in here, if you're not really going to do anything with it. But I do like what you brought up about, like, you know, he needed something positive. So in that part of it, I'm happy it was here.
And also, like, I do agree. It especially because it was at the very end of the episode, it does feel like wedged in. I don't know what the plot line of episode two is yet, but I wonder if it would have been better placed as like the first thing we see in episode
two. Yeah, for sure. After that, Mark is walking along the street minding his own business, and the Immortal kind of pops out of nowhere. Mark, you know, he's trying, what do you say to the guy that your dad killed once and almost killed another time? He's like, hey, Immortal, what up? You know, thanks for the assist back at the warehouse. You know, if you need me, let me know. Moore's like, hey, I'm watching you, buddy. Basically is what he said. I'm watching you, my guy, because I still don't trust you. You know, you're no good, Nick, like your dad. So I'm gonna be watching you. And just kind of flies off. You know, it's a kind of tense situation there. But I mean, who could really blame the Immortal, really?
I get it. But also, I get it from the Immortal. However, Mark did not kill you at any of the times that you have been murdered yet. So, and Mark was also very betrayed by the man that killed you. So, like, I know you have a lot to work through right now and that Omni-Man killed all your friends, but, like, it's not Mark's fault.
Yeah, maybe he has the power to see other realities. And he saw Mark crush his head. I know,
it's like, did someone else fill him in on these other universes? It was really interesting to see, though, that, like, or to hear that in a lot of these other like multiverses that Mark does side with Omni-Man on there. And there's always like something small that is different in those universes.
Yeah, it seems like Mark might be the exception to the rule. Like the multiverses have that happen.
Which will probably not help his fear that he is like just like his dad.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a post-credit scene. Of course there is. There's a post-credit scene in most of the of these episodes. As I'm about to bring up here, something interesting in this episode was that a lot of the characters said the name Invincible many times, and you could tell
they did it in the title sequence.
And you could tell it was a obvious thing, because usually in these episodes we would have someone get ready to say Invincible's name and then it would just flash to the title card. But you could just tell every time a hero said Invincible's name, like, we almost expected it to happen, but it didn't. It was so funny. But at this post-credit scene, we're back at the warehouse that's been destroyed. One of the Mahler bros wakes up. He is half melted because of all the explosions. So you kind of see almost like the, if you ever watch Breaking Bad, you know, spoiler alert, first of all, if you're, still watching Breaking Bad, catching up, like a Gus Fring, half man, half skeleton almost, whereas a half Mahler, half blasted up Mahler. And he's like, what's going on? He thinks he found his bro in the rubble, but it's actually Angstrom, who is all deformed. And so it seems what happened is that because he took the helmet off prematurely, that it really messed him up. It kept what the Mahler bros had put in to keep our main Angstrom and all the other Angstroms separated. It seems to have messed that up. And so all the Angstroms are just in one big Angstrom together. And he has all the memories of all the other Angstroms from all the other worlds where Mark destroyed their world. So Angstrom is blaming Mark for killing all the people he loves and all this stuff. So he's, Mahler says something like, oh man, your brain's real scrambled. Like, you got all the memories of all your people, and that's why you think Invincible helped kill your world. And Angstrom's like, no. Or all the other worlds. And Angstrom's like, no. I won't rest until he is killed. I won't rest until... And then we see Invincible. Like, we see the Invincible card until Invincible is taken down. It's like, oh, there it is.
It's not a blood splatter. Yeah. Like, everything completely turns red.
Yeah, so I think...
I wasn't sure what they were going to do with that. I was, like, very excited.
So it's almost like they filled in the blood, right, at first. Yes. So it's just a regular Invincible card. It's just a regular Invincible card. And then there's, like, a crack in the Invincible screen. So I think that's going to be our new thing. Whenever we introduce the Invincible name, it's going to just have cracks in the Invincible card until eventually maybe it crumbles.
Until it's broken and he's not invincible anymore. Oh my God, this is going to be such a good season. I can't wait.
Yeah, I think it's going to take us through the whole season, and maybe at the end of the season he cracks and he just maybe, like, I don't know, he goes off. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen. So that's very interesting. A very fun little thing they did there with the faking us out so many times with the Invincible, and then we get at the very end. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I felt like they should have left it here, but then we come back to Mahler and he's just walking off grumpy. He says, oh, this is what I get for work. This is the last time I work for anyone else. I thought that wasn't needed. I thought we could have just really left off at the Invincible tag. But it is.
It definitely wasn't needed, but I just feel like they like the creators like the Mahler twins a lot. It's just like, what's a little sprinkle of a little more commentary from them?
Yeah, it seems like they like these little moments of like a character being by themselves, just kind of talking to themselves. It was interesting. That's the episode. I'm very intrigued to get into the multiverse of it all. And, you eventually have to figure at some point Mark is going to go to a reality where he teamed up with his dad and he kind of sees how bad it could have been and how maybe that helps him realize how much of a hero he really is, because he did not go along with this. And it could have been much worse than just thousands of people dying in Chicago.
Yes.
So yeah. I can't wait for that. I can't wait to see much more. I can't wait to see more of our other characters. Interested to see what the Guardians dynamic is going to be with the new members coming aboard. So we're here. We're going to be here all season. We got 8 episodes. They're going to be, this first 4 is going to be part 1, and then part 2 is going to come, I think, early in 2024. So we'll be here with you every episode, breaking it down, talking about what we liked, what we didn't like, and all that good stuff. Gia, did you have anything else you wanted to say about season 2, episode 1 of Invincible?
No, I mean, like, I think I have some similar thoughts that I had to the first episode of season 1, where it was like, it was okay. A lot of, like, jumbled moments, a lot of, like, info dump things that we saw in this episode. But I'm very excited for this season. And nothing that happened is, like, deterring me from wanting to watch the rest of this season. So I'm very excited to see how the rest of season 2 goes.
Yeah, I hope they can get the balance right, because they did tease a lot of things at the end of season 1 that I assume mm-hmm. we're going to see in season 2, but it seems like we're going to be dealing with Angstrom throughout the whole season. And I don't know if it's going to be all 8 episodes. Maybe this will be kind of a plot for the first part, and maybe we'll deal with some other stuff in the second part. But there's a lot teased in that first season that I'm excited to see how that manifests itself in this season. I just hope they don't try and juggle too many balls at one time, that they can really kind of tell a cohesive story. So that's our episode 1. Gia, do you want to tell the folks out there where they can find you and what you're up to these days?
Of course, you can come follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Classically Gia for all of my reality TV shenanigans. Over on Silent Podcast, I'm doing my weekly recaps of, I was about to say Abbott Elementary. That is post-show recaps, and we're still waiting for season 3 of Survivor 45. I am loving the season so far and loving this cast. We just had Merge, and I'm very excited to bring our Merge roundtable back, so I can't wait to talk about this fantastic season. As that is a Survivor podcast, of course, I recommend people follow the Survivor Diversity Campaign on Twitter, as well as read my weekly recaps with Christine Palin on Inside Survivor. And finally, we also have Slosh Survivor coming out with some new episodes soon, our combination of Drunk History and Survivor History. So that's what I'm working on right now, outside of, like, apparently I also have a regular job, but we don't talk about that here.
Who needs those?
I mean, I do.
Yeah.
Anyone from my job is listening. I do need that job. Love that job. However, yes, that is not what we talk about here.
Yeah. So as far as I go, you can find me on Twitter at JAYR1085. For podcasts, I have this one, of course. I have a few other shows I'm talking about here on Post Show Recaps. I'm talking about Loki with Sasha Joseph. We are about, got 2 more episodes left of this season of Loki. We're having a fun time. I can't wait to see what is in store for Loki. Also talking about The Gilded Age with Marissa Garza over here on Post Show Recaps. Having fun with that. That season just started. And also, I will be talking about Lawman Bass Reeves with Chappelle coming up soon. And then on the Rob Has a Podcast for Hap Ups Network, I'm talking about the show Married at First Sight on our podcast, A Perfect Match with Asia Welch. This season also just started over there. We're in the 3rd episode. Had a blast this week talking to Mari Forth over there. Always a good time when she comes on the pod to chop it up with us about that show. That's where you can find me. And until next week, we will see y'all later. Bye.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.